Architects, urban planners, designers, inventors, and citizens have helped shape the cities we know. So have zoning plans and city codes. In fact, those laws are the DNA of any city, according to Arizona State urban planning professor Emily Tallon. Steve asked her to walk him through the rules that shape an ordinary street in her Phoenix neighborhood.
There's a rule about street width. There's a rule about how wide the lanes can be. There's a rule about how many lanes you can have. There's a rule about where the street trees go. There are rules about how wide the sidewalk is, about how wide the driveway, the curb cut, the setback of the building. All of these dimensions are affected by rules.
And how tall the buildings can be. And I'm assuming a big one also is whether you can mix commercial buildings, businesses, with residential neighborhoods.
Yes, exactly. That's one of the big rules that's driving a lot of developers crazy.
So how important are these codes in the way cities work?
Well, I think they're amazingly important, but also underappreciated by a lot of people. We think about big master plans, Daniel Burnham type, you know, drawings. Here's the kind of city you're going to get. But it's actually the day-to-day incremental decisions that traffic engineers or the myriad of different people that are affecting the urban environment. It's that incremental change that adds up to an awful lot over time.
So you're really talking about bureaucracy here, but I'm assuming that there are deeper values behind these rules.
Yep. The rules can also be social mores of different kinds. You know, you can point to a lot of interesting cases like the traditional Islamic city. It wasn't about bureaucracy, but it was about very strong social rules, religious rules about separation, about what's appropriate for facing the street, all kinds of conditions that were part of the social custom.
So when you look at the codes that are part of the fabric of city life in America, what are some of the underlying values that you see there?
Well, that's a good question, because it used to be that the values of, you know, what kinds of cities we were going for was very explicitly translated into a rule. For example, we want to have some mix between single-family homes and apartment buildings, but it can only be of a certain kind. I think the values we're seeing now are much more social separation. By dictating the size of a house, the size of a lot, how many units can be on a lot, those are all ways of socially separating. And that's been used pretty nefariously in the U.S. It's talked about an awful lot, and we really need to change that.
So you're saying most of these rules don't really work anymore?
I think a lot of rules that we have, nobody has any idea why we have those rules. Who said that a house has to be set back from the street 20 feet? Why isn't it 25 feet? Why isn't it 30 feet? How were these things determined? When we first started developing these rules in the early 20th century, we had a much clearer idea about why we had particular rules.
So if we put this in some historical perspective, how far back do modern city codes go?
Well, the first zoning came out of 1870s Germany. But, you know, zoning actually goes back to ancient Roman times, when the Romans said, in the center of the city, buildings can only be this high and streets can only be this wide. Further out from the center of the city, that was a different set of rules. So in the 1870s, the Germans really formalized it for the first time, and it was highly successful. The rules were so simple. Like, the whole zoning code was on one page, and it just showed a map, and it had four or five different zones, and it says, okay, in the center city, we want our buildings to be closer together and taller. In the outskirts, we want our buildings to be a little further apart and maybe not have, you know, industry next to single-family homes, but just a few simple rules. In the early 1900s, when they were transferred to the American context, they had that kind of nuance. They had that kind of mixture of flexibility and predictability. And then it's just sort of a story of people taking a good idea too far and trying to make zoning solve all kinds of social problems that they perceived. People started to figure out, hey, I could make sure that my neighborhood doesn't have any poor people. So you had this sort of homogeneity built into each one of the zones. There are people out there that are very active in trying to reform existing zoning. And the planners of America, of which there are 45,000 of them implementing these codes every day, they know that the rules that they are now working with are a problem, a big problem. We have rules like setback rules that are all about separating cities and making them more dispersed. We need cities to be more compact.
Do we know that people actually prefer to live in higher density cities?
We do. You know, there's been a lot of surveys done of people. At least 30% of the population would like to live in dense, walkable, compact, transit-served urbanism. Nowhere near 30% of the U.S. population lives that way. Then if you look at the demographics and what we have moving in the next 20, 30 years, we've got much smaller households. We've got many more single-person households, the boomers who are empty nesters. You know, all these demographics are about small household size. The supply is not there. And as a result, a lot of these communities, nice urban places, are completely unaffordable.
Do you see this changing? How do you go about trying to convince city planners to rewrite the rules?
There is a movement out there, and it's called form-based codes. There are people out there that are very active in trying to reform existing zoning, getting the public involved, showing them, here's how these changes will affect your neighborhood. And 10, 20 years from now, you'll really see a change. You'll see more walkable, dense, mixed-use, compact urbanism.
So when you talk about form-based codes, what does that mean?
Okay, so form-based codes is a term that's been broadly applied to this reform idea. Let's not have these layers and layers of legal speak without seeing graphically what we're actually getting, without visualizing what we're getting. In other words, the form of the city becomes paramount. If you look at a zoning map right now, it's just a hodgepodge of zones all over the place. In Phoenix, in my book, I think I counted like 200-some different zones in the city. And the pattern makes no sense. It's so perverse the way attention to zoning and to uses produced not a good city, it produced the opposite.
But don't a lot of people actually get nervous when you start talking about changing city codes? Property values might go down, or this big business might suddenly move in next door. Do you have to sort of deal with people's fears when you start talking about changing these regulations?
That is a bit of a hard sell. Absolutely. People get nervous. They think it's all about property value. You have to get them to think bigger picture. The end game here, the end goal, is to create communities that are walkable and diverse and compact and transit served.
Want a different view on city rules? Emily Tallon's put together an image gallery from around the globe, going back decades. You can find a link to it and to her book on our website, ttbook.org.